Session number 11764, Commander Bradford, Reel 2.
Commodore Bradford, Reel 2.
Yes, right. Yes, we were overflown on one occasion, maybe twice, by Argentinian 707. I think on the second attempt they were almost due to scramble one of the Harriers, which was on the deck of, I think it was Atlantic Conveyor at the time, the late Atlantic Conveyor, but the aircraft disappeared. But apart from that, those incidents, it was fairly quiet on the way down.
Can we come on to the question of the transfer of troops for the landing? What kind of problems did that present, as far as you personally remember?
Well, they didn't present any problems at all, because the good Lord was with us, and we had perfect weather. It was decided that, as practically all the eggs were in one basket, that before we went in to the landings, that they would remove 40 commando and 3 para from Canberra to just leave us with 4-2. Because if we had have been hit, obviously 3/4 of the force would have gone down at one go. So 2 days, I think it was, before we went in to San Carlos, say about the 19th of May, we cross-decked using the LCIs from the landing craft. There were no accidents. In fact, the only accident I can recall was in San Carlos when we were disembarking 4-2, where a Marine actually slipped when he was going over the side and went between the ship and the landing craft, but we managed to get him out before the two ships came together. No problems at all, except, of course, when we cross-decked for 2 days, the Marines and 3 para that had left us had to endure. I think some went to Norland and some went to Intrepid. I'm not sure on those, but we got down to 1/3 of our force, which was 4-2 commando, which, if you like, was the reserve battalion. 40 were the first ashore, I think, with 3 and 2 para in the landing, and we held. When we went into San Carlos, we kept 4-2 until things got a bit hot, and at about 10 o'clock it was decided that they would let them go ashore as well. But cross-decking, no problems at all, because although we'd had bad weather that day, we just had a fairly low swell, so you could have ferried them over in a rowing boat.
What would have happened if the weather hadn't been good?
Well, it would all have to have been done by helicopter, which would have taken a good 24 hours. And a very, very slow process. So, yeah, the small LCIs were actually brought alongside Canberra through the doors in the ship's side, and by rope ladders, jumping nets, they went into the LCIs and were ferried over to Fearless and Intrepid, and I think Norland, but I may be wrong on this one, about Norland. We were lucky.
What do you remember going into the sound between West Falkland and East Falkland?
Middle of the night. The original plan had been for Canberra to anchor in the main sound anchor, actually in main Falkland sound. But fortunately this was changed fairly late in the plan, that we would go inside, because if we'd have been left outside, I don't think, my own personal view, I don't think we would have seen another day. I think they would have got us straight away. So when we first went in, what do I remember? Pitch black. The bombardment, I suppose. I forget which warship was doing, but one warship was bombarding the where they thought the Argentinians were. I think it was on Fanning Head. The sound of the gunfire, because we have, apart from practice, we hadn't heard it before, and wondering what was going to come back. This was, of course, after we'd crept through the... Everything was deadly quiet to start with, and the bombardment took place at the time we were actually landing. But and then I think looking through night sights, first time I'd ever used them, it's amazing to see that some out of blackness comes the picture of a ship and whatever you want to see.
And when daybreak came?
Daybreak came, by the time daybreak came in, we'd moved in alongside, or we went in alongside. We felt fairly secure because for any aircraft to get a good lineup at us, they would have had to have, it had been a very short over the hill, and okay, there he is. So we were protected by the terrain that was around. Plus, of course, the Navy were there doing a fine job. We had, I forget who was there with us, but certainly Ardent was doing a fine job outside until she was caught afterwards. Plymouth was also outside, but I think she was hit as well and came in to be patched up. But no real concern. I can remember the first Picaro, which they kept there as ground attack aircraft, obviously on his morning patrol, must have come round the headland and said, good God, I wonder what the hell was going on, to find all the ships there. We knew when we'd been sighted by the first Picaro that it would be about an hour or 2 hours before we were under attack or the Argentinians were attacking, and which, of course, was the case.
What do you remember about the air fighting?
The air fighting is such... At the start, as I said, we kept on 4-2 commando. The only armament we had was the Army blowpipe missile, which is a useful thing when it's sort of a head-to-head weapon, but it's no good in a if something's running away from you. I think we let off two or three of these aircraft that passed fairly close, but the Argentinians' ploy seemed to have been to get the warships first. And obviously if they've got taken the warships out, then they would have gone for the merchant ships. But as I said earlier on, we were well protected in the San Carlos water from the terrain around us. So we weren't really in any, I don't think, in any real difficulty. Luckily the Argentinian aircraft, which were pretty thick on the first day, kept at the warships and, as you know, had a limited success. But they kept away from the merchant ships, and that proved to be our saving.
How frightening was the first day?
It's very, very hard to describe fright in terms. Not for us on the bridge, because we could see what was happening. I can't say that. Obviously, the naval commander, with a tremendous responsibility, the ship's captain, would have felt very concerned about things. But when you can see what's happening, I don't think this is as tough as people down below. The naval captain was very good. Lots of broadcasts were made to people down below telling them what was going on. You know, sort of hold on to your hat or stand by. There's one coming in now and things like this. Well, not very good down below, but at least if you're on the bridge and you saw one coming, you'd be able to duck at the right time.
What kind of work were you personally doing on the first day?
Oh, just assisting on the bridge, basically. In theory, when we were under attack, I should have gone to another area in the ship, which was headquarters 2, if you like, in the event that the bridge was wiped out. So I would be available to assist in fighting the ship. The natural fact, most of the time I spent on the bridge, although we did have HQ2 manned down below, just in case the bridge was hit and wiped out. But we were not hit, so once again the good Lord was with us.
What could you see of the progress of the landings?
Not much of the progress at all, because the opposition was limited. The number of troops, as you've fairly limited around the San Carlos area. The first big engagement, as you know, was Goose Green, which was some days later to the south. That was the first big engagement. We we had, I think, only, I think we had four. I think there were two helicopter crews, I'm not sure. I know we buried these lads about 3 or 4 days later, or 3 days later, off at sea. But those are the first, and we dealt with the first casualties. That's all, but not a great deal on the first day.
What impression did the casualties make on you?
I didn't personally go down and see them all that much in the hospital. I would do it in the course of rounds, but I don't know, the same as any casual, really. The answer to your question is no great impact at all. You were there and there were going to be casualties and that's it. It could have been you, but it wasn't.
How dangerous are the waters in Falkland Sound for a beacher?
I wouldn't say particularly dangerous. It's been a British possession. It's fairly well charted. And, of course, we had the famous Ewan Sotheby Taylor on board, who'd been in there for some years, and a great yachtsman who'd been around and done a lot of private surveys for small boats and landings. And, of course, this had been gone into on the way down, so navigationally, no problems at all. A camera, of course, was limited to San Carlos Sound. We couldn't ever get into Port Stanley as such. We had to sort of stay in the first approach to the heads, the way you turn into the main harbour. We couldn't actually get inside there. But no, the answer, no navigational problems whatsoever.
What impression did the famous experts make on you?
Sotheby Taylor?
Yes.
Oh, great character. But obviously knew his Falkland Islands extremely well. Experience he'd got, of course, when he'd been out there, I suppose, as captain in charge of the Marine Detachment. In fact, he's still with Commander Forces now, I think, on their landing side. Yeah, very, very interesting. He's written a couple of books, I think, on the Falkland environment. And yachting in that area, a very, very good, very useful man to have around.
I think that the Canberra had to be pulled out after a few days from San Carlos.
The thing is that if you leave a ship that size there for too long, you're tempting fate, because you've got a target which is, what, 8 or 10 times as big as a warship. And sooner or later, although their prime targets were, I believe, the warships, the Argentinians' prime targets, sooner or later someone would have got us, I would suggest. We may have taken some sinking, but what one can never tell in a ship is the fire hazard. It's not necessarily the explosive that makes the hole, it's the fire that develops after the attack, and although we were well manned with fire crews and additional naval firefighting parties if we had been hit and a fire had broken out, bearing in mind, of course, that firefighting materials or fire materials, fire resisting materials in a merchant ship are certainly not as good as they are in the warships, we could have had a very serious fire which would have resulted in all sorts of things. No doubt if we'd have come under attack and gone fire and been seriously, obviously the ship would have been beached. I don't think anyone would have allowed her to have been sunk. That's what would have happened. But that was the big problem, you know, fire.
So she had to leave before everything was got off?
If my memory serves me correct, I think we left San Carlos the next day. But, of course, we came back a second time while the war was still going on, because it was decided that they wouldn't risk QE2 into the Falkland area as such. And she went down, the QE2 went down to South Georgia. And we rendezvoused with the QE2 in South Georgia, which I think was on the 27th of May, and took off 5 Brigade, which consisted of the 1st Battalion of the Welsh Guards and the 2nd Battalion Scots Guards with their various supporting units. and then left for San Carlos, where we entered San Carlos again on the 2nd of June. Unlike the first day when we went in, where the weather was foul all during that day, not giving them later on in the day, the second time we went in on the 2nd of June, it was brilliant weather. And there we were sitting in San Carlos getting rid of Fire Brigade on a beautiful, what could have been a beautiful spring summer day. But no, as luck would have it, no Argentine aircraft came into San Carlos that day, obviously not expecting us. We actually remained in San Carlos until the 3rd. We stayed overnight. And the 3rd was also a brilliant day. We sailed PM on the 3rd, and I think as the second day wore on with still no aircraft, we thought, well, you know, is our luck going to hold out? But it did hold out, and we got out okay. So the thing that always interests me is when we talk about the, a little bit of jealousy here as well, is when we talk about the QE2 actually going to the Falklands. She didn't go into the Falklands area. The Canberra did the job for her, but that was good strategic planning.
Did you see any of the ships go up?
No. For most of the time when we were outside, as the action progressed, we were kept away from the main body of warships, which were supporting the two carriers there. If we'd have been with the main body, they had what we call loitering areas, which were sea areas off the island where certain ships were designated to go. These were to the northeast, on the absolute fringe of, we'll say, Argentine aircraft. And the chances of anyone getting out there were so remote that we were fairly safe, apart from, we'll say, a submarine. And then we only were with the main body when, of course, for landings, and we went in the second time. If we had been sighted in the main body, of course, there was always a chance of an exocet. The radar, if you like, the signal from an exocet radar is quite distinguishable, and once one is let off, you can tell immediately whether it's coming. But we didn't have that, fortunately.
So after disembarking 5th Infantry Brigade, the next time you went in was at the surrender?
At the surrender, yes, yes. We went first of all back to San Carlos. We picked up, I think, about 1,000 prisoners from San Carlos, which I think had come from West Falkland and some of the main island, and then of course went back to Port Stanley to pick up the majority of prisoners ready for their voyage back to the mainland.
What impression did the prisoners make on you?
Prisoners as such, well, like our young lads, decided they'd been called up. I would say their army was that we experienced 95% were conscript. Obviously the NCOs and officers weren't, but we didn't have many officers on board. We certainly had a few of the regular NCOs. Who said that the political drivers seemed to be the chaplains who were attached to them, which we viewed with a certain amount of suspicion. I do remember that. Young lads, very happy to be out of a terrible war situation. The big problem was feeding them. We only had time to feed them twice a day, and I think this took us about 4 hours, which they queued at both sides of the after restaurant. We kept the fired restaurant, and I think it used to take us about 4 hours to serve. I think we started about 7 and finished at 11, by which time the cooks were turning to get another meal, which started maybe 3 and went right through to 7. That was the big logistic, and of course having all these bodies on board, which slept in cabins and they slept on open decks, around the ship, and we hoped that we'd have no problems. We only had one company of paras with us as guards on our way back to the mainland, but most of the young lads, as I say, were national service, were so glad to be going back. I do remember walking around with a 9mm pistol in my pocket, but that was purely for personal protection. But they were very good. Yeah, very good indeed. I'd be too glad to be out of it.
What were they fed on?
The same as we were. Same rations as we would have. Anything that was left on board, they were fed with. Exactly the same. No difference whatsoever. We had, of course, Red Cross representatives on board. They came on board as soon as we got into Stanley to watch the treatment. The Red Cross do this worldwide where they're allowed to do so. And no problems whatsoever.
What condition were the POWs in when they came on board?
Well, obviously, the last stage, very, very dirty and bedraggled. And need of a very good dump in the bath or the shower, which we gave them as much as we could, but water was very limited. But nevertheless, I think they managed to clean themselves up and keep warm, and they were well fed.
And what was their demeanour?
Demeanour, apart from the regulars, who'd obviously been defeated, excellent. You know, In fact, it's hard to visualise that these guys maybe 4 or 5 days ago would have shot you if you'd been ashore.
Were they friendly?
Oh yes, as friendly as they could be regarding the language. Oh yes, yes. I can always remember one of the interpreters, Welsh extraction. What's the Welsh colony in South? There's the Welsh colony. Oh, it's gone now in South.
In Patagonia.
Patagonia. That's right. Yeah. Now this guy spoke English and Welsh. Delightful man, who'd been Mender's interpreter. People like that.
Were any of them hostile?
No. Well, it's very hard to say. By their manner, yes. Maybe some of the NCOs. We had some wounded in the hospital, which were hostile, which we took back to Argentina. They were on constant guard all the time. We had commander forces banned on board, since disbanded. Bandmaster at the time, actually, it was the he's the present director of music, Royal Marines, Lieutenant Colonel John Ware, Captain John Ware, as he was at the time, and Royal Marinesmen, or all bandsmen by tradition, they help out with medical and support, and they also acted as hospital guards as well on the way back.
How did this hostility show itself?
Oh, slight hostility, only from NCOs and regulars. Oh, scowls, I suppose, or not wanting to talk, morose, nothing to worry about.
What gave you the impression that the chaplains had acted in the political way?
Because they'd had the arena. I think this was the general feeling that the chaplains had had the field or the rostrum or the arena to try to indoctrinate or put something into the troops. And I do remember, you know, we were told to watch out for them.
And
I'm talking about the Argentinian chaplains now.
You took them to an Argentinian port?
Yes, we took them to Puerto Madryn on the east coast. I think we left San Carlos, let me have a look, on the 17th of June, that's right, with 4,200 prisoners. And we got to Puerto Madryn on the morning of the 19th of June. The fairly dull day, I think, when we arrived, but the interesting thing then was to be met by one of their destroyers, the Santissimo Trinidad, a British Type 42. There again, 3 days before, she would have probably sunk us, and there she was escorting the camera in to Madryn. We actually went alongside in Madryn. Hardly a person moved in the area, in the port area, so I'm sure that the locals or the Argentinians had kept the whole operation very, very quiet, that all these troops were coming back. And as far as I know, the troops were lifted off and taken to various camps to be debriefed or politically debriefed, I presume.
And then the Canberra's task was to...
We then went back to Falklands to pick up the British forces. It was first rumoured that we'd have to take another load of prisoners, but at the end of the day, there were not enough. We didn't ever do another run. We went back into Port Stanley, and there we stayed until we finally... I think we got back at about the 21st, yes, 21st, and then we sailed from Port Stanley on the 25th, and all that time was spent in loading stores, what were left, back on board, and, if you like, bedding the troops down for the homeward run.
Did you get an impression of the state Port Stanley had been left in?
Building-wise, not too bad. A few hits. The mud everywhere, I think, was the thing. You get masses of people moving around. But no, hits. So Port Stanley itself was left fairly intact. I think it was... Where was there a hit? Was it the police station, I think? But only a couple of hits. It's a very, very small... It's a very small area to be. No one was allowed ashore from the crew except those that were their unofficial business. I managed to get ashore actually with the captain the day we went in on the first day. But it was in good shape. I can't recall anything about a great deal of damage.
And you've already said a little bit about the return voyage.
Yes.
Was there any problem then with the troops being on a high, as it were?
Obviously people were on a tremendous high. An interesting thing for me, of course, as a merchant captain, was I think we brought back two civilians, which had managed to get a passage through HM government. I think it was the local doctor, and a chap who'd been living in there, the name of Jack Abbott, who'd I actually met on a cruise in Canada, about 77, some 5 years before, and there this guy turned up for a passage back home, which was most unusual. No, but the voyage itself, home, period of relaxation, rehabilitation, getting the maximum sunshine as they could. Life was still pretty hectic for the boys. They kept them fairly well occupied because obviously you don't want to have 2,000-odd troops, or was it about 2,200, I think it was? How many? Oh, yeah, we left with 2,400 people, 2,489.